I guess at least technically I'm chronologically an adult, and it's a little odd to look at yourself and think that you spent your entire adult life playing the banjo. And if I had any doubts that it was odd, I was reminded of it in 1990 when I was hired to teach music at the University of Colorado at Denver, and one of the esteemed professors voted against hiring me because he said I played the banjo, and that was not a musical instrument. Anyway, this particular tune is a descendant of an earlier tune I wrote called Trail Ridge Road, which the record company unaccountably and without telling me changed the title of to Banjo Road. Jerry told me. Jerry is Jerry Ricks, who's an old friend of mine, like me, from Philadelphia. Jerry was a great blues guitar player who died just recently, and not too many people know that he was also an excellent country guitar player. And he spent quite a few years living in Europe, and during part of this time, he was playing lead guitar in an Austrian bluegrass band, which is not all that weird, except that he happens to be black, and I had a picture of him in lederhosen playing in that band. And Jerry has made a big influence in my family because we constantly refer to one of his comments when we talk about people, and that comment is, "Everybody's crazy." The next four pieces are all about a trip that I made with my two grown children, Paul and Janelle, to the Four Corners Country, which is at the edge of Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. And the first part is about Canyon de Chelly, which is a 78-mile canyon right on the Navajo Reservation. And the only way you can get into the canyon really is through a Jeep trip that the Navajos run. They'll let you in otherwise. But if your car gets stuck, it costs you $4,000 to have it towed out of there. And the second piece is called New Mexico, and there's banjo and guitar here, and I try to put a little bit of the Spanish influence that you find in so much of New Mexico. Santa Fe, which is the capital of New Mexico, is actually the second oldest town in the United States, founded in the early part of the 16th century. Durango is in southwestern Colorado, and it's sort of in an odd location because at one end of it, it's the gateway to a very high mountain range, and at the other end, it leads to the Four Corners Country. And like a lot of the towns in Colorado, it's kind of, in a way, fighting for its soul in the sense that it was a ranching and cowboy type of community, and now more and more people have moved in who have second homes or who are retired and are building things that are much more expensive than anything that was there before. And the Four Corners is the sort of the title piece, which I play here on 12 string. It's a very odd part of the United States. I remember driving for miles, and you see mountains emerge, and once after driving for 30 or 40 miles, suddenly a couple of Navajos emerged on horseback who had been invisible to me up until that point. And I've often thought that in the Four Corners, politicians could sort of, you can lie down and actually physically be in four states. So if somebody wanted a campaign in the four states, they could lie down and say, "Oh, I just campaigned in Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona." For about 11 years, my wife and I had a summer home in Astoria, and then we actually moved there around the year 2000. And when we moved there, there was a sort of a land trade going on where an old-growth forest was being exchanged for some other land, and a local land baron was getting hold of it, and he was probably going to end up cutting out the old-growth forest, which is pretty valuable. And it turned out there was a fellow who had appointed himself as the caretaker of that land. And through a very odd kind of symbolism, he has a terminal disease, and he's probably going to die at the same time that the trees are cut down. So this piece is all about that. Double Banjo Intuition stems from a 1949 jazz piece by a pianist named Lenny Tristano. And Lenny had a quintet, and he played a piece, several pieces actually, in the studio where there was no written music, and the only thing that the musicians knew was what key the piece was in. So here my friend Chico Schwal and I are playing banjo and banjarine, and that's all that we know about what we're going to do. I've got three pieces here that are about a friend of mine whose name was Wesley Westbrooks. And Wesley grew up in a town called Arkadelphia, Arkansas, and around 1930, 1931, when he was 10 or 11 years old, he was delivering milk for a dairy, and he became friendly with a young girl who was the daughter of the dairy owner, and she used to occasionally give him ice cream. Well, Wesley was black, and she was white. And one night, some friends of his parents came to the house, and they said, "You better get your son out of here, or there's going to be trouble because there's been some talk in the town about him and that little girl." And the next day, Wesley was put on a train to Kansas City, Kansas. And his parents never told him why for years and years. They just told him that he was better off in Kansas City because the schools were better, and he would go live with his Uncle Fred, who worked at the Armour meatpacking plant. So the three parts of the piece, the first part is about what his life must have been like in Arkadelphia, kind of quiet, rural, not very pressured. Second part, I try to convey the idea of an 11-year-old kid going on a train to Kansas City, not quite sure when he's going to see his parents again or why he's leaving. And the third part is called Charlie's Not Home, and it turned out that one of the people that lived a few blocks away from Wes was a young saxophone player named Charlie Parker. And Wesley and his friends used to go over to Charlie's house, and they'd hear him playing clarinet in the basement of the house. And they'd knock on the door, and Charlie's mother would come to the door, and they'd say, "Can Charlie come out and play?" And she'd say, "No, he's not home." Dave's Dance is about our cattle dog named Dave, who approaches each day with total joy and enthusiasm, and we call him the family role model, so that's what I try to capture here on the banjarine. Bix, Claude, and Baden. This is the only one of the pieces that I wrote on this instrumental album that was not written in 2007, but about some 30 years earlier when I was going to music school at the University of Colorado in Denver. And the original idea was to try to write a guitar piece in the style of Claude Debussy. And Bix Beiderbecke, the great jazz trumpet player, was an inveterate fan of Debussy, so that's where that got in. When I started to reconstruct the piece in 2007 for this recording, I realized that I had sort of thrown some Brazilian guitar things into it, and that probably came from many hours of listening to a Brazilian guitar player named Baden Powell. Sam Brown was a friend of mine who lived in New York, was a marvelous fingerstyle jazz guitar player. He also played Turtle Over the World with Miriam Makeba. Kind of a musician's musician, not really the ideal studio guy, because he cared far too much about what he was playing. One day we were playing in a recording studio. I think we were doing some sort of a jingle session. And, you know, here we were at this high-level studio making a lot of money. We came out, and Sam was arrested for overdue traffic tickets by two huge policemen. I remember them taking him away. And my saying to him, "Sam, is there anything I can do?" And he said, "No, not really." In a way, I owe my music career to my brother because he's tone deaf. When I was 7 years old, my brother and I were taken to downtown Philly, and he was supposed to have some piano lessons. He was about 11. And the teacher worked with him for about 5 minutes, and she turned to my mother, and she said, "He's tone deaf. What about the other guy?" And that's how I ended up studying piano for 7 years and learning to read music and learning some classical music. Didn't really use it, but it's where I got introduced into music. So in Folk Song USA, I try to recapture some of that piano style. And for the first time in about 100 years, I actually cut the nails of the fingers of my right hand to try to pretend that I could still play the piano.